Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Second and six. Williams makes a cut and will roll into the end zone for the touchdown. No flags.
Yeah, they're going to run around or just throw this thing up and try to run out the rest of this clock.
And they have done it. Chiefs are Super Bowl champions here in Miami as they win it here in Super Bowl 54.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
That's Matt Spiegel's friend Joe Buck on the call on Fox.
And then I met Buck.
That's right. Met Buck, and the rest was history. Spiegs in for Mac. It's Mac and Parkins on the Score. We'll talk to former Cub Mike Montgomery coming up at 3:30. He's your pal, isn't he?
He's a good dude. Yeah, no, he's we talk sometimes, and he's not afraid to tell you stuff, and then he kind of definitely gets active in getting in there and trying to clarify if he feels like he's getting misrepresented or attacked. And I know he was active on Twitter today trying to sort of clarify some of the initial comments, right?
Yeah, so he was on a Sirius radio show, Sirius XM, not S-E-R-I-O-U-S, S-I-R-I-U-S. It's not important.
Andy
he
Cohen
was
on a Live.
What was that?
Andy Cohen Live. I know you don't miss
Watch what happens. Yes.
Andy Cohen Live. Okay, I'm glad we did that. I apologize. And he was asked and was talking about what it's going to be like to broadcast games with no fans if, in fact, football comes back and is played without fans.
Going into this season coming up, and that comes with a huge asterisk, and hopefully there is a season, there's probably going to be a season in doing games with no fans, which will be difficult. I think Fox and these networks have to put crowd noise under us to make it as normal viewing experience at home.
You think they'll do that?
I do. Yeah, I
really?
Think they'll do it. I know. In fact, I know they'll do it. And they are to the
that's
point
that's
now
the conversation right now.
It's pretty much a done deal. I think whoever's going to be at that control is going to have to be really good at their job and be realistic with how a crowd would react depending on what just happened on the field. So it's really important. And then on top of that, they're going to put, they're looking at ways to put virtual fans in the stands. So when you see a wide shot, it looks like the stadium's jam packed. And in fact,
wow,
it'll be empty.
That's wild.
Andy Cohen loves stepping all over his guest. it's interesting. I had thought about the virtual fans in terms of the crowd shot. I hadn't really thought about the artificial noise. It makes sense to me, and I have not been watching Korean baseball. I know you have been a little bit, and I know they're not doing this sort of thing, but I have to be honest with you. I trust big game production of the NFL, and we see this all the time when broadcasters try something. If it doesn't work or it just becomes distracting, they can scrap it, and there's nothing they could try that would make me turn off the NFL as long as, you know, they're showing me the NFL.
Sure.
So my guess is, like, they'll figure it out by week two or three if by week one it isn't perfect. So that is news in the broadcasting space that Joe Buck is talking about there, but it doesn't concern me in the least because they'll figure it out, and I just want to watch football.
Oh, sure. Remember, there was a glowing purple puck in NHL broadcasts.
Correct.
For a while. You know, so networks try stuff and they'll figure it out. And kind of that give and take of reaction is part of the conversation. I think Buck just kind of went first here for many of the networks, for many of the people, and it ended up being, you know, Buck on a radio show as opposed to a producer in a Richard Deitch article on The Athletic, you know? It's interesting. I did something on Hit and Run the other day, Danny. I mean, I know you were listening. I know you always do. But I did something. Did something where I just played the natural sound of a couple baseball plays from the Korean baseball organization with no broadcasters, and played the natural sound of a couple MLB games from last year. And one of the things I've been missing more than anything in terms of baseball is just the quiet rumble of 30,000 people. You know, just that like steady hum of background noise that is a part of every game, and it's filled with the tension of, is something going to happen here? I don't know. And it does exist still in the KBO. It's just 70 people. Like, you hear this tiny number of people steadily doing stuff, moving around. You hear the crack of a bat on the steps or in the on-deck circle. You hear people shouting things, whatever. Right? You hear the swell of reaction when someone hits the ball. It's just 70 people as opposed to 30 grand. It's weird, but I, for one, would dig it and would not only get used to it, but I would be, if I was a broadcast exec, I would be exploring the opportunities that this kind of thing provides. Who else can I mic? And if I don't have to mic them, I might not have to because there's so few people there. What are the opportunities here? What are we going to hear? What are we going to learn? How can we use this to make it unique and interesting? That said, I'm not surprised that networks might go the other way.
Yeah, I love, you know, taking shots and being innovative and trying creative new things. The NFL will run into a problem in that the majority of its games are on Fox, CBS, or NBC, right? Like traditional over-the-air FCC television.
Yeah.
ESPN has Monday Night Football, and as you've been watching The Last Dance, they can put up a little bit of a disclaimer before and say this program contains mature language, not suitable for all audiences. And then you can hear, you know, Michael Jordan calling Scott Burrell, make that free throw, ho. Like, you can hear him do those things, and they can drop F-bombs and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not naive enough to think that ESPN on Monday Night Football would just live mic an NFL field and let all of those superlatives fly, because, whoo, boy, that could be uncomfortable. But I'd love it. And in the future, could I see it happening? Yeah, I could.
Could I see
a scenario where Amazon was like, hey, you're paying to stream this thing just like you're paying for HBO. There's no censorship there. There's no censorship here. Why not mic it all up and let us hear it? I do think that's possible in sports. Would leagues have a problem with it? Maybe, but for the money that Amazon could pay, my guess is they'd get over it. So I honestly don't know yet which one I prefer, like just ambient noise or pumping it in a little bit, but I'm looking forward to figuring it out, because they're going to have plenty of opportunity before there's 80,000 fans back in an NFL game. Though I did read one thing, I think it was the Panthers owner who said, just because we can't have a full stadium doesn't mean we necessarily need to have no fans. Like, there is some talk of letting, you know, a very small number of people into these games and, making it mandatory social distancing and spreading it out so that you hear something. So there's still a long way to go between now and then, but I like the idea. I like both sides. I hope that CBS tries it with no fan, fake noise, and Fox does it with it. And let's just learn together which is the right way to go.
Oh, man. See, now I'm definitely hoping that it's not some mandated norm that's in the television deals or something that the NFL and MLB says, okay, this is the way you have to do it and you have to pump it in, because it would be great to hear. Of course, the networks like Fox, they're going to try and make it more like a sitcom, right? Like, let's create the perfect environment. Like, there's a laugh track. Let's create the crowd track. So here's the steady, slow rumble. Just leave that. Here's the button you hit when something exciting might be happening. When there's an outcome of the play, here's the button you hit when it is exciting. Like, when the pass is complete, right? Like, how do you time that out? Somebody's job is going to be, like, hit the excitement ramp up, and then when the play is resolved, hit the negative or positive outcome button, right? It's like, and that could be fascinating to hear them doing that. And you know what? Some of it will fail, and it'll be an added entertainment bonus. And from to your point, how about ESPN on Monday Night Football? They've been trying to make Monday Night Football special since they got it, and since it started falling apart in the ratings, right? Yeah, here's your opportunity, Joe Tessitore. Make it special. Make it special by letting us hear everything, and you take the different chances. I think that could be kind of cool if we get different approaches from different broadcast entities.
Texters coming in with some ideas. One that'll never happen, one that's hilarious. Make it season ticket holders only in stadiums. No, sir, that will not work. There are 50,000 Bears season ticket holders. Like, that's, you can't social distance and only make it for season ticket holders.
How about everyone who's just, how about just fans of the team only?
Right. No Packer fans, no cheeseheads allowed. I know you want your special perks with your season ticket package, but I can assure you that that will not work. And then how about this one? The fake crowd noise better boo Ryan Braun every at bat. Yo, Mr. Marquee Television over here. Can you run that up the flagpole? That is genius.
I will absolutely do it. It is, as a texter says, the Truman Show sports edition. I love that. Got certain movies, man, just like they were prescient and they continue to be prescient. And that's the way it's going to be.
Like Contagion?
Yeah, man. I know. Sorry. I told you. I watched it early in this thing, and I made my wife sit through it again. Like, you're going to watch this. And at the end of it, she's like, why did you make me watch this?
That's good husbanding.
Because
right
I want
there.
You. I want you to be as miserable as I am. That's my goal. but
that's
but yeah,
marriage.
So, yeah. But it, come on. It's you know how for old radio plays, they had the guy that like the was it the Foley artist who would make all the noise, like instead of the horse, let me take the horse and ride over to the market, and you got the guy with the wood blocks in the corner going brum, 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 like making all that happen. Somebody's gonna be doing that with a giant Tannehill-esque soundboard of magical sound effect creations.
He does these impersonations. I swear they were the real people.
It didn't sound like a horse in a 1940s radio play.
It just transported me to that place and time. But also, like Joe Buck, the consummate professional and your pal, would never do this. But could you imagine, like, Spiro Dedis or Gus Johnson being like, listen to the roar of the crowd, like, and it's fake crowd noise?
Joe Buck would totally do that.
Oh, he would? I'm disgusted by that display of the crowd. Sir, that's your production assistant piping in crowd noise. Oh, yeah.
How can they react that way? How can they? Yeah, exactly.
Just casting judgment. Bob Costas comes in and does a halftime essay about the fake crowd noise being totally tasteless. The possibilities are endless, man.
That's what I'm saying, man. But seriously, in the baseball sense, it'll never happen, really. But I would love to just hear, like, the 70 to 90 people that are in attendance. I would love to hear, all right, which guy is an active, loud chatterbox who likes to try and psych his teammates up? Which guy is just an a-hole bitching about everything, you know? I'd love to get to know these people a little more during the games.
Well, yeah, and it's all just going to be this blank canvas of trial and error, right? So the UFC event, UFC 249 that just happened, one of the fighters, I think it was Greg Hardy, actually, that lovely human being, who said that in the fight, listening to the ringside commentators helped him adjust in fight, and he came back from losing to ultimately winning the fight. And I apologize if I have the details of it wrong. I didn't order that card, but I believe that was the story. And, like, UFC going with no fans was really interesting because you could hear, and of course you're paying for pay-per-view, so they don't have to censor anything. You're hearing the corner yell all of the instructions to the fighters, right? That's great. We're about to see golf in June. There will be no spectators. This has a little bit less to do with the broadcast, but my buddies and I who golf, we joke about how the PGA Tour players just have an unfair advantage. They hit the ball too far, you know, into the rough. It doesn't just roll 40 yards to the right. It invariably bounces up against some 75-year-old geriatric who can't get out of the way. And then their ball's like 5 yards into the rough instead of 40 yards into the rough. Like, you're taking that away. You're going to have people all over the place now. So, like, home field advantage, man, in football.
Yeah.
The Superdome in New Orleans, Seattle, Arrowhead, these places, it's not going to be as much of an advantage as it usually is. So, like, broadcast and otherwise, no fans being there, we honestly might be understating how different and how much that's going to change these games.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be really weird. And the DJ, you know, the in-house DJ is going to have a massive role at those stadiums. I mean, he already does, but, like, he's going to fill in the blanks. Like, up in Green Bay, they always do, "Let's go Pack," right? It's a call and response between the DJ and the crowd. He has to do both parts.
I think it's "Go Pack, Go." Is
whatever it is. Okay, yeah, screw them. They're not allowed in my stadium anyway. They're not allowed in.
Right, only
Chris Tannehill.
Only Bears season ticket holders. So, all right, so forget sports for a second. We're going to talk to Mike Montgomery at 3:30. When you have, because this is maybe a little bit of like a Malcolm Gladwell-esque question, and we don't have a ton of time here. We can get into it a little bit later on. But yeah, like, when you've been, as I know you like to do, sitting around and thinking of stuff.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do some thinking.
What are you thinking about in terms of, like, when we return to normal, what will new normal look like? And when you think of, so, like, I'll give you just an example. Like, I can't see myself ever getting on a cruise again. Not that I was a big cruise guy before, I'd only done it once in my life, but I can't see I always kind of wanted to do the Alaskan cruise. Can't see it ever. 50 years from now, can't see myself wanted to do an Alaskan cruise. That would be one for me where I feel like this new normal. I was thinking about, you know, I love going to restaurants, right? One of the best restaurant cities in the world.
Yeah.
But going to a restaurant is, it's like a distraction, right? You're paying for better food than you can cook at home. You don't have to clean up. It's camaraderie. It's socialization. What is the experience of the restaurant going to be like if your waiter has a mask over their face? Is it going to be able to have that same escapism of, like, forgetting about your troubles and the enjoyment of socialization? Because you can't wear a mask while you're eating food, obviously. So, like, will I enjoy going to a restaurant the same way if the serving staff is wearing masks, which they should be, but it will lose that aspect of escapism? And will that take away from some of my enjoyment of going to the restaurant? So, things like that. Have you thought of new normal and where you think we're going to be permanently changed from this?
Yeah. See, this is where I get filled with fear.
Oh, my bad.
Well, I just because one of my favorite things in the world, Danny, is singing and performing, which I've done all my life. Right now, I have gone the longest without doing a live gig since 1992. This is the longest I've gone without singing with a band on a stage to people. Okay? And I have had the absurd good fortune to play music for, say, a room of 300 people in tight quarters singing out loud together. Do you know how contagious it is to sing? Seriously, more than breathing, singing and speaking in close quarters. Like, there are stories about choirs in Washington State where they tried to have a rehearsal and be socially distant, and everybody brought their own music and they didn't shake hands. And still, 75% of them ended up showing symptoms and two of them died, you know? So, envisioning a group of 200 or 300 people together singing along with a band, I don't know when that ever comes back. And not only is that a big part of my income and profession, it is very high on my list of joys. So that's where you've taken me. So thank you. I want to thank you.
Well, listen, I didn't mean to do that, obviously.
I know.
No, but
that's the reality. It's like, I don't know. I don't know if I'll take a city bus. I don't think I'll take an Uber. I don't think I'll bother to take an Uber if I can't get a ride from someone trusted. I might ride a bike. I might walk. You know what I mean? Like, those kind of things is some serious new normal. But I'm really wondering about people singing together and making music together. It's got to come back, but I don't know when, and I don't know exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, I got, you know, the live music thing is going to be tough. It's, it has to come back. It's too big of business for it not to. The music industry has already shown an ability to adapt when, you know, Napster came around and people were just downloading music, and that changed the industry for forever, but it didn't stop music and art and all of that. Like, that will exist forever. How will it exist? I don't have a great answer for you. And I would think that would be one of the last things to come back. But I would also think that once you get to a vaccine point, it'll just come back.
I would think if there's a vaccine, or if there's treatment, let's say we figure out a way where it can be treated at the very least.
In that scenario, you're going to be dealing with like what I was saying about restaurants. Like, some will go, some won't, and that's fine, right? Like, the people who aren't concerned about it, or the younger or the healthier and all of that, like, it'll be different. Venues will be at reduced capacity. You maybe won't see as many people like arms around each other and like the real close quarters, and like there will just be kind of like side eye glances. Like, I was walking the other day, and like I sneeze when I like step into sunlight a lot of the times. Like, sun sneezes, I guess, are a thing. I sneeze 3 times, and man, if you sneeze outdoors when you're walking, like, oh my God, you feel like a pariah. Like, I swear, it's just the sun.
How dare you have a human bodily function? How dare you?
So I just think things like that are different. And, you know, you mentioned Uber. I was thinking, okay, the L, like the red line after the show is probably done for me, when you're like, you know, it's hand-to-hand combat when the L's going north towards Wrigley on a summer day. And like, on a good day, it smells like BO. On a bad day, it's urine. Like, I'm probably done with that. But I would think that I would be willing to get into the backseat of an Uber.
Have you taken one now? Like, to this point, I have, and the guy was wearing a mask, and I was wearing a mask.
Very early, like the first week back from Scorehouse. So like before the mandate to stay at home, I took one, but I haven't been in an Uber in whatever 7 weeks. But I absolutely think Uber survives. I just think things are going to change. I was reading this article today about what they do for like international air travel. It was a woman who flew from London to Paris to Hong Kong, and what happened when she got to China, and like the things that they were doing for the contact tracing and the bracelet and the mandatory quarantine. And it was just like, oh, well, that's different than how we do it here right now. Yeah. So I don't know what it is, but I find myself thinking about it all the time, because things that will be different will inevitably be better. Like, that's just how innovation and progress works. And some things will long for yesteryear for a long, long time, those of us who can remember it, whereas like Ruben and Owen, they'll just grow up in it and it will be their normal. But I've been thinking about it constantly, like, what permanent changes will come out of COVID-19?
Sure. Yeah, and the smart businesses are using whatever time and money they have to try and innovate right now. My brother, who you've met, is a caterer in New York City, and obviously his business is in disarray with no parties on the books for a good long time. It's a very, very successful business, but he's using this time to innovate and think about what parties might look like. You know, when they're able to have a party for 400 people, what does that food look like? I don't think everybody's going to be dipping their hands into a bowl of peanuts together anytime soon.
Probably not. Yeah. The buffet industry is definitely taking a hit. Right? Like, you're going to want your own serving spoon for the buffet. It's wild, man. Like, every single industry is going to be adapting in some form or fashion, some temporary, some permanent. And we'll see what sports TV looks like without fans, and hopefully we'll see that sooner rather than later. He made the final out of the 2016 World Series. He's back where it all started with the Royals. What's Mike Montgomery hearing about sentiment among players returning in the age of COVID-19? He joins us next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Score.
Here's Mike Montgomery. He struck him out on a curveball. Swing and a miss. That's it. Cubs win. What a performance by Mike Montgomery.
Ground ball hit to short. Scooped up by Russell. Tobias for one on the first double play. And Montgomery escapes another jam.
Swing and a miss on a changeup. Swing and a miss. Man, that changeup tonight has been devastating with two strikes.
Swing and a miss. Strike three. Montgomery with another good off-speed pitch.
That is a new season high for Mike. Mike Montgomery in the chop house.
That's how you hit the knuckleball. Mike Montgomery knows the secret.
Two down. Cubs lead by a run. A tying run at first. Martinez at the plate. Bryant guards the line at third. Here we go.
To the man who recorded the final out of Game 7.
Montgomery's pitch.
This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series!
The longest drought in the history of American sports is over.
It's over, and the Cubs have finally won it all.
Mike Montgomery.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
Thanks for hanging out with us. It's Danny Parkins and Matt Spiegel in for Mac, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And we're thrilled to be joined now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. You heard it there. Cubs World Series hero and the answer to a trivia question for forever. He's back with the Royals now, but he'll always have a special place in Cubs fans' hearts. Mike Montgomery back on the score. Monty, how's it going, man?
Hey, guys. A lot of good memories in that clip you guys played. I like it.
Yeah, man. I assume it just puts a smile on your face, but when you think back to those times, what's the first place your mind goes?
Just being at Wrigley and, you know, a nice day game kind of brings back those memories that I think all of us are wanting to see again. But, you know, sellout crowd and just good baseball. I mean, that's what I first think of. And then obviously there's so many things, but man, that's kind of what we're all wanting.
Yeah. Hey, Speaks. I was just going to say, like, how are you doing? Because we were just talking before you came on about how we all are craving that normalcy. How are you doing with no baseball right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd like to say I'm doing pretty well. I kind of stuck out here in Arizona, but just trying to make the best of it. And you know, I've always been a glass half full kind of guy, and you know, I'm just trying to do what I can, stay in shape, stay, you know, staying safe and all that. But you know, it's 100 degrees every day here, so I hope that's good for the situation. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, I'm good, and the family's good, and we're kind of just, you know, waiting it out and just looking at the news and watching what baseball is going to do. So we're hopeful. I'm pretty optimistic about it. You know, hearing the news a couple of days ago, it's kind of a step in the right direction. And, you know, we got a lot of good, smart people that are going to lay out a strategy. And I think, you know, I'm fully expecting to play this year, and I'm rooting for it.
Yeah, a lot of us are rooting for it. Absolutely, Mike. That's nice to hear your optimism on it. Among the guys that you've talked to, is there a willingness to kind of be open-minded and think about whatever you can do? Obviously, you want the owners to think about it and sacrifice too, but the guys that you've talked to, are people open to the idea of kind of doing what you have to do to figure out a way to get back on there and play?
You know, I think there's a lot of guys that do, and I think it would be, it's such a good opportunity for baseball right now to potentially provide that kind of entertainment to America, that if there's any way we can make this work, we got to do it. And, you know, I think it might take, you know, a few weeks. Even, you know, you look at Korea and just seeing that kind of baseball, even with no fans in the stands, you still are watching that game going, wow, okay, this is baseball. This is what I remember. And so, yeah, I mean, the second we can get something figured out, you know, I'm going to be right there and ready to go. And I think the overwhelming majority of players, you know, would be willing to go play. But, yeah, I mean, there's just so many things that go way beyond me and all of us, really, that those are the issues we got to get first.
We're talking to Mike Montgomery here on The Score. Every sport is trying to figure out a way to come back and deal with the safety element, right? That's obviously the first priority that you were talking about. But baseball has this other thing with this very public CBA negotiation between your union and the owners. Where does that stand in your mind, and how is the progress of that being communicated to you guys as players?
Yeah, I mean, that issue is definitely there. And, you know, I think for me, the safety is more important, because I'd like to believe, you know, from the owner's standpoint, you know, any half season, whatever it ends up being, is still better than no baseball. And also, I do think that as players, you know, if we're going to be putting ourselves at risk, you know, I don't think we should go and say, okay, you know, we're going to continue to give up more and more of our salaries when we're essentially being more and more at risk. So I see both sides. But again, like, I'm aware of it, but I'm not in the trenches fighting those battles. I'm kind of just, you know, a third party looking in, and there's a lot of smart people that are working on it. And so that's what makes me optimistic. And just that we're going to come to a deal, whatever it ends up being. But you look at it like baseball, this is our chance to really be that one thing that everyone's watching. You know, if baseball is on TV, you know, 5-6 nights a week, you know, in today's landscape, think of how many people are going to plan their nights around that. You know, just those kind of things are really something that we got to take advantage of if it's possible.
Absolutely, Mike. The opportunity is tremendous, and we certainly hope that the sides come to an understanding of it. Is there how big is the mistrust for like ownership in general, in terms of like, do you guys feel like they've been making a lot and not telling you about it in recent years, or do you feel like it's been relatively above board in terms of how you guys split money overall?
Yeah, I mean, look, as players, we don't usually, at least a lot of, I mean, I'm sure there are guys that do, but we don't really get into that, you know, because we, as players, we kind of, we play, but
I also, as I get older in this game, I start to see that more. And, yeah, I mean, I've talked to a lot of veteran guys and guys that are really, really involved with the talks and negotiations. And, I mean, yeah, it's how every sport is, kind of. The owners versus the players, you know, that narrative is there. But, again, I think the owners, I've never really had – you know, just natural dislike of owners. I've always looked at them kind of in a positive light. Like, you know, if you own a team, then you're obviously doing something pretty good in life, and you've made something of yourself. So, I think the owners also got to look at us players and just understand the value that we have. I mean, we're watching, you know, some of the best players in the game, and you just can't really replace that with anything else. You know, it's something that, as a professional athlete, that's what we have as our leverage. You know, people like to watch us play a game, and that's a very powerful thing. So, I'm just hoping that we get this figured out, because, you know, I'm trying to keep my arm in shape, and shoot, I'm still going back to spring training. I finished four innings, you know, like 2 days before they shut it down, and I just thought to myself, man, this is the best I felt in years. Like, I'm ready to go. And that's kind of like the part that I get a little sad about. But, you know, we're in the right direction. So hopefully we keep going that way.
Can you just, like, take our audience through, like, what are you doing to keep your arm at, you know, you can't be meeting with your teammates or in the facilities and all of that, like, logistically, whatever you're willing to share about your preparation process, what is it like keeping in shape in the age of the coronavirus?
Yeah, you know, we had a good group of guys that stayed out here in Arizona, and just we can't go in any facilities or anything, but we're just going to the you know, outdoor field, and basically shirts off, you know, sun's 100 degrees, but we don't really care. We're out there. We're doing our running. We're doing our throwing, trying to, you know, throw bullpens when we can, trying to find some catchers that are able. And there's some guys, you know, there's rehab going on too, that some of those guys are, you know, in and out. But it's really, you know, for me personally, I've kind of had some, not abusive years, but like extended years of doing a lot of roles. So I think physically for me, it's helped me kind of recover and play. You know, you're always kind of playing catch up from an arm health standpoint. And then now I'm like, first time I was throwing the other day, going, wow, this is the best my arm felt in probably 3 or 4 years. So on that side of it, you know, that's I would look at the positive of that. And it's interesting, because I know some guys have more opportunities to, let's say, go face live hitters right now, or, you know, everybody's doing whatever they can. But I think it's like riding a bike, I guess. Once you get out there, you get a few innings in you, or you get off the mound, you spin some curveballs up there, you're like, okay, I remember how to do this. And it's just about the physical part of being able to not get tired after, you know, 20, and then eventually building up to like 100, 120 pitches.
And I'll tell you what, Mike, if you live streamed some of those videos, the shirtless Royals workout live stream would probably do very well with some fans. You're aware of that.
Yeah, no, it was funny. My wife wanted to come just kind of watch. So she was in the car and she didn't really know what to expect or nothing. And then all of a sudden there's just like, you know, 6-7 guys out there playing catch with shirts off, and it's 100 degrees, and then we're doing sprints and push-ups and, you know, all the prison-style workouts out there. So, but it's good stuff. And
she enjoyed it, is also what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I know she had a good time with it. So, but, you know, the other thing that – and I don't know what other teams are doing, but the thing about the Royals that I've actually appreciated is they've put us on Zoom calls, and they've had, you know, Matheny and Mike and Dayton, they've got on and tried to, you know, we've had games, we've done like little trivia things, and just getting everybody together on there kind of has been a cool thing to see some of the guys and just talk to them over Zoom. And yeah, I mean, so I'm sure other teams have done some similar things, and then they're trying to just update us with all the information they got. But because that's the other element that you gotta, you know, kind of a lot of people may not realize is just when you're around guys, there, you know, the clubhouse environment, vibe, joking around, like that is almost something people miss as much as the game itself.
Mike, you were abused for some of those seasons. I'll go ahead and say it. But it's so difficult to go back and forth between all those roles. It's nice to hear the way you're talking. Even though there hasn't been a season yet, maybe there will be, you're getting a chance to start and go deep and focus on one thing I know is what you've wanted, and we're wishing you well with that. That said, your place in Cubs lore is legendary. And we were wondering this before the show, because something that we've always said when somebody does like what you did, you know, get the final out of a World Series, that guy's never going to have to pay for a meal again in this town. That guy's never going to have to pay for beers again in this town. Did you get at least one free meal somewhere along the way? Like, did a waiter or a restaurant owner come up to you and say, hey, you're Mike Montgomery, tonight's on me?
Hey, that is one of the reasons that I absolutely love Chicago. Yes, that happened, you know, multiple occasions and unexpectedly, you know, without even really trying to, you know, go out of my way to really even, you know, make a scene. And, yeah, the people of Chicago, you know, in the last few years and right up until we left to go to Kansas City, like, and even if I go back, they're still, they're unbelievable and grateful. And, you know, it's just such a great time period in Chicago sports history. And, you know, the months and after the World Series and that off season, and me and my wife, we stayed out there in the off season as long as we could, just to kind of soak it all in and just get to experience that. So that's one thing that, you know, and it's been a few years since then, but I'll kind of think about it sometimes, be like, man, and they replayed it, the World Series, you know, a couple weeks ago or whatever, a month ago. And just watching that again, you kind of get those goosebumps, those chills, because you remember what it was like to be out there. And you look back and go, man, that's pretty crazy that I got to throw the last out for arguably one of the greatest World Series, you know, the Cubs winning the World Series. Who would have thought, and growing up in Southern California, that I would be in that position? And yeah, I mean, it's just crazy, and that's just kind of the game of baseball, you know, in a nutshell. Is that you need stuff like that. That stuff happens a lot and for different guys.
Monty, that's when they noticed you. But you said, like, you even would try not to, you know, make a scene, which, like, do you ever, like, call up a restaurant and be like, Montgomery, need a table for four. The Mike Montgomery, yeah, of Game 7, though, by the way.
Make sure you have left-handed silverware.
They definitely noticed
ready
that
for me.
Name, and they would ask if I was actually him, and I would be like, yeah, that's me. And like, they knew the name for sure.
Yeah, it's good. Like, you don't want your wife using her maiden name to make reservations. Like, make it under Mike Montgomery. And,
yeah, if we're in Chicago, I'm not using the alias.
Yeah, there's no reason to. All right, Mike, since there have been no games, and we really appreciate the time, whenever we've had guests on, we've been just looking for stories, you know, just like tell us a good story to distract us in Chicago here since there's no sports for us to talk about. Can you think of a Game 7 story that hasn't been told ad nauseum? Like, your version of the Jason Hayward speech, who drank the most beers on the plane, like a behind-the-scenes Game 7 story that maybe Cubs fans don't know.
Okay. I guess, so behind-the-scenes Game 7, right at the rain delay, you know, like we're in the bullpen, and I'm sitting there with Arrieta, I believe it was Lackey. And so, like, we go into the rain delay, and I'm sitting there, and Grimm was there, I think, and some of the bullpen guys decided to walk in the clubhouse, and me and Arrieta and one more guy, I can't remember who it was, but we stayed out in the bullpen because we're like, all right, let's just hang out for, like, 10 minutes here because it's covered. So I missed the entire Jason Hayward speech completely because I never went into the clubhouse except for, you know, maybe for 3 minutes. I literally, me and Arietta finally said, all right, let's go walk in. As soon as I walked in, I saw first, like, Chapman was kind of like getting consoled by some of the teammates. And I remember Lester was like, kind of just like, hey man, we're going to get this. We're like, and then I missed the Hayward speech completely. And so 5 minutes later, they're like, okay, game's going to resume. So me and CJ Edwards are walking back to the bullpen. And I looked at CJ and I go, hey, this game's going to come down to me and you. Let's go. And it kind of, me and him looked at each other and go, like, we kind of gave us that, we got this. And sure enough, me and CJ had to go the 10th inning there. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. And then the other thing was, so I'm warming up in the 10th, and as soon as, you know, I see Madden kind of walking out there, I just remember looking around, and the camera was there, and all of the teammates, like, I kind of got a little bit of doubt for a second, and like, oh, this is really happening moment, and then every single one of those guys that were down there just looked at me with, like, the uttermost confidence, and that kind of just gave me that extra little momentum going in there. They're like, you know, so that, those, I mean, that was awesome. So that's kind of my story for you guys.
That's great.
Tremendous.
Mike, and listen, I know it was tough for you here and going back and forth with starting and relief pitching, and you were the consummate pro, and, you know, you talk about the abuse or whatever. It sucked. It was a tough role for you, but you handled it with class, and you will always have, like I said at the beginning, this moment in this part of Cubs history. So at least on the north side, you'll be drinking for free for a long time. Now that you're, you know, a rival with the White Sox, maybe not so much on the south side, but know you'll drink for free on the north side for a while.
I appreciate that, guys. Yeah, I hope they won't like me down there. That means I'm doing well against them. So we'll see.
Hey, Mike, stay safe, man, and thank you very much for answering the call for us, and we hope to talk to you down the line.
All right, guys, you too. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, that's Mike Montgomery. Pretty cool stuff. He's
Yeah, really, really cool stuff. I love him and CJ. Looking, all right, man, it's us, yeah, because Joe wasn't going to go to Lackey or Arietta at that point. And that image of Chapman being consoled, we've heard about that. Like, Chapman was devastated because you're required to shut it down, and he was not able to do so.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, there's not going to be much new from that time, just because, you know, fairly well-documented time in sports history, Chicago sports history. But that's a dude who had an interesting spot. It would suck to have missed the speech, by the way. That would suck. Like, we're going to stay out here because we're under coverage. We can't be missing anything. They're telling us this rain delay is not going to be that long, right? We're not missing anything. Let's just stay dry out here. Me and Arietta. And then he misses this historic thing and he comes back. But anyway, that's Mike Montgomery and his story. I offered up a choice to Bears fans earlier today, and the polarization of the responses meant I struck some sort of chord. We're going to get into this coming up on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.